To a podcast from the BMJ.
Welcome to the BMJ podcast on the 20th November 2009. I'm Duncan Jarvis, the podcast producer. This week we're looking at the end of life. In the UK, death is a subject we tend to steer clear of. Talking with a patient about the end of their life is uncomfortable but necessary. A recent report from NCPOD, that's the National Confidential Inquiry into Patient Outcome and Death, called Caring to the End, has highlighted why this conversation needs to improve. We hear from David Mason, one of the clinical coordinators for the report, about their findings.
We don't actually have very good provision for caring for patients who are coming to near the end of their life within the community.
Also this week, when end-of-life care hits the headlines, it's almost inevitably about assisted dying. We hear about times when doctors in Switzerland or the Netherlands help a patient to die, but what about when they refuse to? Roline Passman and Dick Williams join us to discuss this study into the ways in which patients' ideas of unbearable suffering may differ from their doctors.
For doctors, it's a very hard task. It's always very difficult to do because it's not really a logical or a natural part of what doctors do.
But you can read that research paper online on bmj.com. And don't forget, if you want to say anything on the subject, you can do so with one of our rapid responses. I'm now joined in the studio by David Mason. David's an anaesthetist and the clinical coordinator on a new NCPOD report called Caring to the End. Earlier, we heard that in Holland, the majority of end-of-life care happens within primary care, and in fact, even euthanasia happens in a patient's home. Your report says that only 20% of people in the UK actually die at home, and most often it happens in an acute hospital. Why is that? Why is there a difference?
Well, the first thing is that the figure of 20%, interestingly, is actually comes from the Department of Health's strategy. It's not a figure from NCPOD. But I think one of the reasons is that we don't actually have very good provision for caring for patients who are coming to near the end of their life within the community. It's not something that we've generally, certainly in recent years, we've actually set up systems in place to do that. And when you become unwell, and particularly if you become critically unwell, you phone 999 or you call your GP and the patient gets admitted to hospital.
And that's not always appropriate.
It certainly isn't appropriate. And it would appear that in about 40% of admissions, it's been quoted, that are actually admitted to hospital in patients who are nearing the end of their life, that it's actually inappropriate. And in this particular study, which was looking at patients who died within 4 days of admission, so that's very, as it were, sort of tip of the iceberg mm-hmm. in some respects, we found that in about 6% of patients were judged by our peer review group that their admission was unnecessary. And most of the reasons for that was that there was lack of adequate community provision, poor communication between different teams, both in the community and within hospital teams as well. So it is a problem. And as I say, the Department of Health strategy recognised that, and what they want to try and do is actually improve provision in the community, allow patients, because most patients would actually rather die in their home.
Okay, going back again to the previous interview in this podcast, we heard that people in Holland are quite explicit in having these conversations about end-of-life care, whereas we aren't. Where is this communication breaking down in the UK? Is it between GPs and patients, or is it also between GPs and hospitals?
Well, I think it's actually, to be honest with all levels, I think our general population, society, don't like to discuss the issues of death and the care of the dying. It's something that it's not, I would say it's taboo, but it has been. I mean, in recent years, I think this has been recognised and we're moving forward. And likewise, doctors and nurses don't like to talk about it as well. So I think it's at all levels. And you need to, when someone is approaching the end of their life, you have to be sensitive and considerate. And if appropriate, have that discussion with them, because patients and people may have very clear views about what they want, and doctors and nurses need to be able to understand what their needs are and try and provide the best possible care for them in that moment in time, and also of course with the relatives as well, because often it's the relatives who have been caring for some of these patients.
One thing that's in place to help physicians are these end-of-life care pathways. For our listeners abroad, could you explain a little bit about what they are?
It's effectively a tool. It provides a pathway with various stages on it of care. You don't have to be on an end-of-life care pathway to die. But I think where they have a role, probably, particularly in the acute environment, acute sector of hospitals, is perhaps for healthcare professionals who maybe don't have as much experience as maybe you'd see in a hospice. And where what they provide is a useful guide, really, for those healthcare professionals and also, of course, for the patients as well, in what is the best care in terms of providing appropriate nursing care, in terms of pain relief and other symptom control.
So your report looks at people who died within 4 days of being admitted, but these end-of-life care pathways can start before that, presumably.
Yes, the length of time will obviously vary depending on the patient, and therefore they have to be adaptable. And it's also important with these end-of-life care pathways that they're reviewed regularly, that the patient is reviewed in terms of their general condition. And you may need to make adjustments based on the patient's condition.
Could you tell us a bit about what's being done to try and improve end-of-life care in the UK?
Well, I think the main issue within the Department of Health strategy is all about realising that there needs to be better provision in the community. So I think the main thrust of the report that has been written by the Department of Health is actually to try and improve what is available in the community, because they recognise that patients don't want to be admitted to hospital to die. They'd rather be in their own homes. And therefore, they want to try and put in place the appropriate skills and provision for that. And a lot of that's actually to do with education. It's actually ensuring that the social health care providers have actually got those necessary skills to look after patients nearing the end of their life. They are going to put more money into it, so they say, and we'll have to wait and see, and hopefully they will be putting more money in to provide that provision. But there are some patients who will also need to be admitted to hospital, and again, the area where they've put some credence and weight on is actually trying to ensure that the communication between what's provided in the community and what's provided in hospital is better. So, for example, if a patient has been provided with end-of-life care in their home, but they need to be admitted for any particular reason, then things like advance directives and do not attempt resuscitation orders mm-hmm. are actually available to the clinicians, so they know the actual situation of the patient when they're admitted. They're also keen to try and improve the use of palliative care teams and develop them further, because I think they have a crucial role in part of this education process. They're the experts in managing end-of-life care, and therefore they should have a pivotal role, really, in ensuring that the general level of education and understanding of healthcare teams improves. In addition, they want to introduce some actual research into end-of-life care, and we've already mentioned end-of-life care pathways, but what would be valuable is actually to see what role they actually do have, and actually do research into that to see if they are the most appropriate tools. And then finally, actually audit our clinical practice as well to actually see whether we're providing good end-of-life care. And part of what NCPOD have done, we've done a baseline looking at a period of time just before the Department of Health strategy was introduced. Mm. And that would be a very useful baseline, which we hope could be used in the future.
Okay. How do the end-of-life care strategy's aims and the outcomes of your study meet up? Are there any areas that they're missing out on?
No, not really. I mean, I think the Department of Health strategy actually is remarkably comprehensive. I mean, what we've shown is that the areas they've picked out are appropriate areas. I mean, there are deficiencies, as I've just described to you. Yeah. And as I say, I hope what we can do with this particular report is use it so that people can refer to it, and when the strategy is further implemented, and go back and see, you know, how things are improved.
David, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
The full NCPOD report is available on NCPOD's website, and there's